Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same Game Parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is the Yahoo Sports NBA Podcast, hosted by Chris Mannix. From interviews.
Let's bring in John Wall.
He's Reggie Miller.
Bring in Eric Spoelstra.
To the latest NBA news.
To insights you won't get anywhere else.
Rioting is bad. You shouldn't riot.
Past episodes of the podcast can be downloaded in the iTunes Store and Google Play.
Why wouldn't you go back?
Subscribe and leave a rating or comment. Here he is.
Speaking of guys putting their foot in their mouth.
Chris Mannix.
Yes.
All right, joining me this week, you can see him on the Players Only broadcasts on TNT. You can see him on NBA TV. He's a 2-time All-Star. He's an NBA champion. And you can also hear him every Sunday, 12 to 3 Eastern time with me on Fox Sports Radio. He's Caron Butler. Caron joins me here on the show. What's up, Caron?
Hey, what's going on, brother? How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Just a busy time nowadays in the NBA. Unfortunately, the main topic in the NBA is injuries, right? I mean, it's the top tier teams are all dealing with some injury or another. But the big story this week has been the ongoing situation in San Antonio. For people that haven't been following it, the Spurs fighting for their playoff lives right now. They're hoping to get Kawhi Leonard back. Kawhi Leonard doesn't feel completely comfortable. There was a meeting that took place. The tone of the meeting is a little bit unclear. It was described by ESPN is emotional. The players kind of push back on that, specifically Danny Green. As you look at that whole Spurs situation, what do you make of it?
Hey, listen, it's really hard to tell what really is going on because, you know, they're so quiet about everything that happens with that organization and with their players, and they keep everything in-house. But what I would tell you is that where there's smoke, there's fire, and something just isn't right. And as far as I know, you know, you're looking at Kawhi Leonard's situation. He needed to be reevaluated. He wanted a second opinion from an outside source. Obviously, usually doctors and medical staff usually have the best interest, you know, for the organization and not the players. So, you know, guys want to go search independently to find their own doctor or their specialist in that space. And just get an educated opinion on their own and then make the evaluation on how they want to move forward.
If you were Kawhi Leonard's teammate, I mean, would you be, you know, curious as to what's going on? I mean, whether or not that it was a intense meeting, there clearly was a meeting to talk about this particular topic. How would you react if you were Kawhi's teammate?
You know what? I'll definitely be supportive. Because you have to understand that Kawhi is a guy that won a championship with these guys, finals MVP. He's invested in that organization, have been for some time. He grew up there. He became a star. And, you know, the thing about him is that, you know, he wants to be healthy. You know, he's a competitor, you know, competed against them. You know, I love his work ethic. And he's the heir apparent to, you know, Tim Duncan. He's the guy that's supposed to take this franchise and this organization to the next level. And something isn't right from a health standpoint. and you want him to be completely healthy going forward.
You know, if the playoffs started today, Caron, San Antonio sitting in sixth place, they'd play Portland in the first round. If Kawhi Leonard came back, let's say next week, is that enough time for him to kind of reintegrate himself and make the Spurs at least a threat to get to the conference finals?
We don't know. We don't know because basketball is all about rhythm. Like, just being honest, you look at the situation and you understand that gives them a better shot, but you just really don't know. You know, it's all about rhythm. It's all about being on in sync with one another. As we touched on, you know, they probably had minimum training camp time. Obviously, we know they had minimum games. He has not been practicing with contact. That has not been released to anything like that. Probably been just an individual thing where he's with his trainers or whatever the case may be. So we really can't gauge where he is. You know what I mean? And timing is everything when you're talking about playing, you know, when everyone is playing like it's their last game. This is a whole new season that's coming up, which we're talking about the playoffs. And everybody's going to be at their best and everyone's fighting for something.
Could you imagine if they slip to 7 and have to play Golden State and Kawhi's back and Steph Curry's out? Could you imagine? I would imagine the Warriors aren't afraid of anybody, but they'd have to roll their eyes a little bit at having to get that first-round matchup.
But you know what? They probably would, but at the same time, I feel like they welcome any challenge because, like I said, the chemistry is going to be key. It's a huge component to what they need to have going on. And you just don't see that right now. Now, I don't know if that's by design or it's trying to throw us off or whatever the case may be, but the last time reported by a great reporter, which we all have a great deal of respect for, Lisa Salters, she had said that he was coming back Thursday. Mm-hmm. He did not come back. And even Manu Ginobili, Tony Parker, echoed that the sentiments of Manu Ginobili saying, look, we have to continue on as if he's not coming back. And that's been their stance, and they're moving forward with that.
Does a player like Kawhi, and look, I understand that you've got to protect yourself and look at your future, but for a guy like Kawhi that's playing for the Spurs, and this might be Manu Ginobili's last year, and this might be Tony Parker's last year, or certainly last couple of years in the NBA, is there any obligation on the part of Kawhi Leonard to fight through pain and injury to come back for these guys?
I think his obligation has been fulfilled with being a better version of himself in order for him to be finals MVP and for them to bounce back after the Ray Allen shot and be able to win that championship. Now, you have to think about the Leonard family, the Leonard legacy, and most importantly, your health, your tempo, and about the marathon of your career. Like, you don't have that much time to play at this high level. You don't have this long window. It's a pocket. There's not too many LeBron James out there, guys that continue to elevate and excel in year 15 and 16 of their careers. You know, so with that being said, you have to maximize this space as much as possible. And he understands that the only way that he can be his best on and off the court is being healthy.
All right, so if the playoffs start today, like I said, Portland, San Antonio, but Golden State would take on Minnesota, and they'll do it without Steph Curry. Boston, the Eastern Conference at the 2 seed, would take on Milwaukee, maybe without Kyrie Irving. If both those stars are out, Caron, which team is in the most trouble in the first round?
You know what? I would say the depth of Minnesota scares me with, you know, Golden State because Minnesota have handed Golden State a L without, you know, Steph Curry in that lineup. And they have a scheme. They have something that works. So that's a scary situation for me because you have pieces. You have a Derrick Rose who showed flashes of having some left in the tank. Jamal Crawford coming off the bench. Teague. Jimmy Butler should be coming back. You know, that's a scary team to face. Wiggins and Cat. A lot of star power, a lot of names. And then you look at KD, who, in my opinion, is still, you know, 1B to LeBron James as the second best player in all the planet. And then you have Klay Thompson coming back with the injury to his thumb, his shoot hand, mind you, It's just so many variables, and then running the possibility of not having Steph Curry.
Does Minnesota play enough defense, though? I mean, they've just been so average defensively all season long.
I think people, like, get re-engaged. You know, like, you have a long schedule, you have a long season, and you're just trying to get through the season healthy at this point. Position is almost solidified. You kind of know where you're going to be at. You're in the playoffs. You know, really don't – you worry about the matchup, but the confident thing about that part is that, hey, we feel we can beat anybody. That's your mindset going into it. So now you just want to get through as healthy as possible and bounce back.
On Boston, Karan, I want to get your thoughts on Brad Stevens, because on this road trip, I feel like Brad Stevens has been showing his coaching muscle. You know, I know you were on the broadcast for Oklahoma City. In Portland, I thought Brad had a masterful game plan that helped a skeleton crew in Boston take out the Blazers, who were playing at basically full strength. And then they go down to Sacramento, down by 8 at halftime, and surge to blow them out. What impresses you about Brad Stevens? He may not win Coach of the Year this year, because I think Dwayne Casey has a kind of a stranglehold on that. But what's impressed you about Brad Stevens?
Just his willingness to adjust. A lot of coaches are really stubborn when things happen. They don't want to deal with their reality, and they don't know how to adjust on the fly. They don't know how to get the most out of the personnel that they have available. And what was remarkable, as I sat down with him, you know, pre-OKC game just last week, he was talking about, look, no Jaylen Brown, no Kyrie, no Marcus Smart, so many injuries, no Gordon Hayward since early in the season. And they've just been able to adjust on the fly, featuring Tatum, Ozier, featuring Morris, running the offense through the bigs even more. You know, putting big lineups out there that consist of Greg Monroe and guys that can be at the elbow to facilitate, know how to pass the ball, put them in situations. He's like, look, going forward, we're gonna go big. We're going to slow it up a little bit more. We're not going to be as fast. But that is our strength. We have bigs that can actually play at an amazing level, and that's what we're going to utilize. And it's working.
Let me ask you this about him. As a former player, when you're looking at a coach who didn't play the game at a high level, or an NBA level, who didn't coach at the NBA level, do they have to do more to prove something to the players? What does a coach that doesn't have those NBA kind of bona fides have to do to earn that respect?
I think you got to show with results. And you have to show the understanding of your knowledge of the game and the who, what, and the why. Just as reporters and as we report things from players' perspective or what we see, we always have to explain the who, what, and the why to the audience. And that's the same way with players. When you're in the film room, you got to explain who, what, and why. You have to be honest with guys. And I think guys really receive that information, and he seems to be just a straightforward guy, an honest guy. Nothing but great things being said about him.
Yeah, I agree. Let me finish with this. As we talked on Sunday, you're still buying in on the Cavaliers as kind of the team to beat in the Eastern Conference. As we speak, Karan, the Cavs are 29th in the NBA in defensive efficiency. They have not been a good defensive team all year long, regardless of who's been on the roster. Tell me why I should believe, anyone should believe, that when they get to the playoffs, they're going to play enough defense to get past a Boston or a Toronto or even a Milwaukee or a Washington in the first or second round?
Because they have LeBron James. And we always continue, as simple as that.
Yeah.
And we always continue to doubt them, but somehow, some way, he figures it out. He blacks out. He go in dark mode. He turns off all his social media and all these things. He gets his team and his soldiers lined up, and they get re-engaged, and they get focused on the marathon of the playoff season, the new season. You know, like, he's going to be so dominant. And I was thinking about, like, the matchup, the possible matchup, and who can actually slow them down, or who in the Eastern Conference can be a wash at that position where that guy is going at LeBron James equally to what he's doing from a production standpoint on the offensive end, defensive end. And with the surges of Kevin Love being back healthy, undefeated with him back in the lineup, Ty Lue is working on some game plans. Obviously, you know, he's watching closely on a winning streak. It's like it's almost picture perfect for them to do it again. It's going to be a little more difficult because teams do have more confidence and they feel like, look, we could poke the bear. But everybody got a plan until they get hit, as we touched on yesterday.
The Raptors blew a big lead last week in Cleveland, but back in January, they won by 34 in Toronto. I mean, barring something crazy, they're going to have home court advantage throughout the playoffs. Why doesn't Toronto built to do this? Why not favor Toronto, a team that's been maybe the most consistent in the Eastern Conference all season long?
Well, you know, LeBron has over a 70% win percentage against the Toronto Raptors. And, you know, seeing that moment like it was going to be the passing of the torch last week where that team had matched up, being the Toronto Raptors against LeBron, and it just seemed like they was waiting for it to happen as they played the Cavaliers. LeBron's playing, and they just like, look, I'm just waiting for the LeBron factor to kick in and get them over the hump. And that's – it just don't seem like they have the confidence to be like, you know what, we're going to beat this team. I just don't see it. They say all the right things, but it just don't – like from a body language standpoint, it's not visual. I don't see it.
Is it just the – I mean, do you think Toronto beats everybody else? I mean, do you believe in them up until that point?
Yeah, they can beat everyone else. Yeah, they definitely can beat everyone else because they have a big three that's consistent enough and confident enough to know that they can beat everyone else, if you follow me. Like, so you look at the backcourt of DeRozan and obviously Lowry, they feel like they can put on that show night in and night out. But that show is going to be contained or even considered a wash when you're talking about the big three of Serge Ibaka, who might give you 16 to 20. DeRozan might give you 20 to 30. LeBron is going to watch that performance with his points, probably 27 to 40. His rebounds, anywhere from 9 to 16, 17 in the playoff series. And obviously his assists, anywhere from 7 to, you know, 14, 15. So that's how dominant he is. Like, he can watch a big three performance. And then the others, the Jordan Clarksons and the Kevin Loves, they just got to be solid. They just have to be themselves.
You played for the Washington Wizards. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being not at all shocked and 10 being completely shocked, how shocked would you be if Washington beat Cleveland the first round?
Oh, man. You know what? I'd say a 6.
It's a tough first-round matchup.
That would be a tough first-round matchup, but it's all stringing upon the health of John Wall. Mm-hmm. They can't beat them as assembled. And then I need to see some games, five. I mean, we don't have that many games left, and I need to see at least 5 where the team has adjusted to John Wall being back, all the riffraff is beneath them and past them. And they're buying to, like, look, he's our superstar. He's our guy. You know, I know they're saying the right things. You hear Bradley Beal saying, look, we need John Wall back. You know, Gortari, everybody, we need John Wall back. But is that really how you feel? Mm-hmm. Because I feel like the energy of basketball needs to be right in order for them to excel and be the better version of themselves. So time will tell. Mm.
Well, Karan, always great to talk to you. We'll talk every Sunday, 12 Eastern, 9 Pacific, on the Chris and Karan Show, Fox Sports Radio, and looking forward to it, man. Thanks for joining me.
Likewise, brother. I did this whole interview on the Peloton.
Perfect, perfect. Let's not do the radio show on the Peloton. How about that? We'll go to studio for that.
My dude.
Thanks for joining me, man.
All right, take care, brother.
When we come back, Utah Jazz guard Donovan Mitchell.
Everyone knows how important stretching is before an event. So does Mattress Firm, except it's your dollar. Your budget stretches further when you're shopping in America's Neighborhood Mattress Store. It's a true home run, and you'll have a ball. They're the head coaches when it comes to mattress expertise, but know this. They are more than mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed, from adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor. They have you literally and figuratively covered up like your favorite cornerback. Go to mattressfirm.com/podcast to see what deals are happening as I read this sentence to you. They even offer you a 120 sleep night trial to ensure perfection and 120 night low price guarantee so you know you paid the perfect price. Talk about a 1-2 punch, a knockout, if you will. Score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to get the play-by-play on how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow.
All right, joining me now on the podcast, one of the best rookies in the NBA, playing for one of the hottest teams in the NBA right now, is Donovan Mitchell. Life's pretty good these days, huh, Donovan?
Yeah, not too bad. Things are going pretty well for us right now as a team.
So if I asked you back in October what a successful rookie season would have been like for you, what might you have said?
Playoffs was probably my first thing. I wanted to make the playoffs. Just getting in and getting where I fit in, you know, is kind of having energy, you know, providing a spark off the bench and just doing anything I could to help the team.
But
definitely
would you
not this?
Would you have liked to have found your way into a rotation? Would you have thought just, you know, being in a rotation?
I thought coming in, you know, I'd be in the rotation. I just didn't know how much, you know. Obviously we had some injuries, you know, Rodney and Dante. So things started to accelerate pretty quickly for me. But you know, at that point in time it was just more so just finding a way to just get in the rotation and contribute any way that I can. Mm.
The one thing that jumps out about you early on is that scoring seemed to happen for you right away. Your fourth game, I think it was 19 points. Mm. Sixth game, 22 points. What was it about the style of play, whatever in the NBA was working for you, that offensively it just clicked?
I think just the confidence that my teammates had in me, one. And then two, you know, just the old floor is so much – so there's so much more space in the NBA than there is in college. You know, just being able to get by a defender and finish at the rim and not worry about so much help, you know, or if there is help, finding the open guy. So it was a lot simpler, you know, than in kind of having to fight through four different guys to make one layup, you know. But I think that was the biggest thing, just being able to find gaps and ways to get it into the paint and finish.
Did it surprise you that it came this quickly? Because in college you were a good scorer, but I don't think you ever cracked 30 points in college.
And missed a free throw.
Okay, 29. So you remember that. It's good. You know, and you get to a couple months in, you get to 41. I mean, did it surprise you that the scoring came as quickly as it did?
Yeah, I think that was the game, you know, that the 41-point game. It was like, you know, I could do this and consistently. But, you know, like you said, at 19 points, 22 points, you know, there was games where I'm like, oh, they don't know me on the scouting report. That's why I got a good game. Like, I never give myself, you know, the benefit of the doubt. But, you know, just being able to build confidence, and it definitely did surprise me. And to this day, it surprised me. And, you know, just sometimes I make shots and I'm like, man, like, because I know last year certain shots I take wouldn't go in, you know, so like the ones I'm taking now. So I think that's the biggest thing, just being able to finish and, you know, just – have fun with it too has been the biggest thing. But yeah, I didn't see any of this.
How has the NBA 3-point line been different for you?
I shot him a lot in college, you know, despite what Coach P had wanted in practice and all that. But, you know,
were you preparing for the next level?
I wasn't even thinking about it for the next level. I just said, you know, if teams are going to guard me at the 3-point line, I've got to be able to shoot from 2-3 feet farther out. So I used that NBA line as well, kind of like my measuring ground, and every time I shot in the gym, I would shoot from there, because if I could shoot from there, then the college line would be real easy for me. And, you know, I think that's what really helped me kind of accelerate my jump shot in the NBA.
Have you noticed over the last couple of months teams try to adjust to you? Mm-hmm. You know, you see them get a good look at you the first couple of months, your second time through, things change. Have you seen that?
Yeah, definitely. Pick and roll coverages are a lot different. Nobody goes under on screens anymore, unfortunately.
You missed that?
Yes. So now it becomes a lot harder reading the blitz, reading traps, reading when the pick and roll the guy is up, you know, shifts. And I think now it's – beginning of the year was all about – no, it wasn't all about, but, like, that's the only thing I was seeing, you know, was shots, like getting to the – finding a way to get in the pick and roll and get to the rim. Now it's getting to the pick and roll, making the right read, making the right play, making the right pass, and just making – the right basketball play.
Do you remember the first team that showed you something different that you thought they were going to play you one way coming in, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, that's – I hadn't seen that before.
Charlotte, at Charlotte. I think it was more so they played me a certain way the whole game, and I think they blitzed me in the fourth quarter, and that's when it really shifted. Like, I turned the ball up. We had the game won, and I turned the ball up like three straight possessions, and we lost. And that game, I realized, all right, they're coming for me. Like, they're game planning. Like, they let me get comfortable, and to the fan, I had a great game at 35 points, even in a loss. But, they were letting me get whatever I wanted for the first three quarters. And the fourth quarter came and it switched.
A lot of rookies, at some point, you see them hit kind of a wall. You play a lot of games, you play a lot of minutes. At least on paper, it doesn't look like we've seen that from you. Mm-hmm. Have you felt, January, February, into March?
There are times where you feel tired. I was sick for a little bit. I went through a stretch where I think it was New Orleans, Memphis, San Antonio, those three games. I was really sick. I didn't play against San Antonio at San Antonio. I just wasn't back to myself. It was actually right during the streak when we started. That's when I really was tired and sick. But despite that, I think there's help taking the time, because what I've learned and what I've noticed is, a lot of rookies don't take the necessary precautions on their bodies or kind of resting and doing all that. And, I think being my biggest thing is I'm not trying to be like everybody else. I'm not trying to be the first thing I said was I'm not trying to hit the rookie wall. And, everybody says, oh, it's inevitable. You're going to hit it. It's going to happen. But, why not change it? Why not kind of be different from everybody else? And I think that was just my mindset. So learning from guys how to take care of my body after practice. I'm the first one here and most of the time the last one to leave just because I'm taking so forever to do my treatments. I don't live with anybody. I'm by myself. So, I just go home and watch Netflix and go to sleep. So it's real simple for me. So I think just being able to rest and take care of my body as much as possible.
What's your Netflix binge of choice?
Probably The Office and Burn Notice are my two favorite, but they took Burn Notice down.
I was going to say, those aren't even Netflix shows.
They are.
No. To the original Netflix series.
They took Burn Notice off, and I was pretty upset about that one. But I got it on DVD USA Network, hooked it up for me. So
you're still rocking the DVD player? You still got it?
No. Well, I am now. I actually just got one because of the DVDs, but I put it in my Xbox, so it's like the same thing, but not so much anymore.
take me back for a minute to draft night. Your expectations on that night? Were you just hoping to be a lottery pick? Were you hoping to be?
I was just hoping not to be like, and I hate to do this to him. Aaron Rodgers. I think it was that he was sitting in the green room for a while. It's funny, I don't really tell a lot of people this. Like, I watch the videos of the guys sitting there, and I think that's what really got me through a lot of the workouts because people don't understand you work out for all these teams. Like, the top, I would say top five, six guys, top eight don't really work out for a lot of teams. But from that point down, everybody's scrambling to work out. So I worked out for like 15 teams in the span of a month. So I'm in 15 different cities. I've never traveled this much before. Waking up 6 crack of dawn, doing the workout, flying out the same day, going into the next city. And it gets tiring. There were just days where it's like, man. But, the end, obviously the end goal is worth it, but people don't understand how grueling that process is. And, the videos like that, there's fear. I'm not trying to be that guy. And I think the biggest thing was just being able to work out as hard as I could. And I didn't know where I was going to get picked at the end of the day. I thought I was going to go to New York because I worked out with them before the draft, the day before the draft. So the draft's on Thursday. I worked out like Wednesday. Thought I was going to go there. I thought I was going to go to maybe Sacramento. I had a great workout, but, I knew they had their eyes on the Aaron Fox. And then I thought for sure Charlotte was going to pick me. And then after that, I thought for sure Detroit was going to pick me.
So that was probably a handful of teams from down.
Yeah, I thought I was going to shock people because I thought New York was going to do a shock pick and pick me at 8. Didn't work out that way.
Well, they shocked people still and picked Frank. Yeah, that was a shock.
He's been doing his thing too. But the one team I could say for sure I thought I was going to was Charlotte, like 100%. I thought I was going there.
You mentioned all the workouts that you did. It is, after you coming off like a really strong college career, Are the workouts and all the draft commentary, is it humbling in some ways because, you know, teams are seem like they're looking for weaknesses more than looking for strengths, and analysts are looking for the negatives as opposed to looking at all the positives? I mean, what was that part of the process like for you?
To be honest, and in a few words, it pisses you off, you know, to be honest. It's like, man, I tried my best to be to not look like an athlete, and I say that as I try to, if I walk down the street, you know, if I'm not wearing Jazz gear or team gear, you don't know who I am, you know, and obviously it's a lot harder to do that nowadays, but, you know, that's my, I pride myself on that, being a respectful person, you know, outgoing guy, and, you know, for teams to kind of look at that, it's like, man, like, I'm just trying to be the best person I can, and then that's the off-the-court stuff, so that's Coach P, you know, he gave us all a lecture of how that's what they do. Like, people don't know, they send like private investigators to kind of come find, see what you do. And the stories, because he was a GM for the Celtics, so he told me stories about guys that he looked at, how they didn't pick guys because of certain things. So that also scared me into not doing anything crazy as well. But yeah, and then on the court stuff, you know, there's just stuff that you just can't control. Like, you know, there did games where, you know, as a team, we weren't at Louisville, we weren't a great shooting team, so, you know, they're making right good passes. You know, our point guard only averaged, I think, 4 assists a game. You know, I averaged like 2. So, like, you know, the numbers show he doesn't have a lot of assists. Well, you look at, you know, a team like UCLA, where all they have is 3-point shooters, you know, so their assist numbers are going to be higher than another team. So there's a lot of explanations that they don't see, you know, that people point out, but, you know, it's tough to hear all the negative stuff about you, but I think that's what drives me. Mm-hmm. You know, I prefer hearing negative stuff over positive stuff. I prefer hearing like what I did wrong than good job, in my opinion. So
did you start to hear or start to wonder who was who out there when you hear stuff about private investigators and teams doing research? Did you start to wonder about who was calling who about what?
I think you worry if you have something to hide or you have something like, you know, negative, I guess. But for me, So you can call my first grade teacher. The only thing my teachers from earlier on in my career would say is that I wasn't really good in school because I didn't do a lot of homework. I would focus on gym and recess. Those are like my favorite in lunch. That was the only thing. You know, I think that the impression I leave, like I've tried to leave on people, and this is without even thinking about the NBA, it's just trying to be a great person, you know, and just be a good guy, you know, and I think that's just the overall impression I've been trying to leave to people. And I was confident that was going to be the message. It was just more so, can I shoot? Can I dribble? Can I do this? Can I learn to pick and roll this, and that?
The teams you mentioned before the draft, the one you didn't was Utah. I mean, where was Utah on your radar the day before the draft, the day of the draft?
So by the time I got to the draft, although I didn't know where I was going, I had a pretty good feeling that I was going to be in the teens. So Utah had the 24th pick, and I had a great workout. My first workout, a great workout. So I said, you know, worst comes to worst, you know, if I'm sitting there, I have a good feeling at 24, like I'll be in Utah for sure. Like even if I'm there for 23 picks, you know, I have a good feeling.
That about probably would have killed you, wouldn't it? Sitting there,
100 for 23 picks, 23 would definitely kill me for sure. And you know, I told my agent right after the work, I said, man, like I wish they were a top 13 or what did I say, like top 10, top something like that pick, because I was like, man, like I killed it. Like I thought I did really well. Mm-hmm. And I love like the organization. I met with Dennis Lindsay and all the scouts and whatnot, and they went through all the negatives and the positives with me. And, you know, I think that was one of my best meetings. And they weren't in the radar at that time, I guess draft night, because I thought I was going into teens, but at least I knew. I was like, all right, 24, I think I'll be good.
Mm-hmm. And when they drafted you, I know you liked the organization, but this was a team at that time, right around draft night. They had Rodney Hood, Gordon Hayward was still in the mix, George Hill was still in the mix. Did you wonder at all how you fit in, or was it not about that at that point?
Right after I got drafted, like you don't think about anything like that.
I'm in the NBA.
They could have been 8 guards and whatnot, but you got drafted at that point. But as it started to go along, I started. Like before we started the season, I watched 70 of last year's games, I believe, just to get a feel for the team. But you know, obviously Gordon left during summer league. George Hill signed with Sacramento, and Shelvin.
70 games? You watched 70 of their games?
Yeah.
Wow. Just sitting at home.
Just watching
closed.
Games. You know, like at that point, it was like, I don't have class. You know, like I don't have schoolwork. And I feel like I always tell my mom, I feel like I'm missing, like I should be doing a big project or something. Like I'm missing something. So that was my big project, just watching and trying to learn. And I didn't know what I was looking at. You know, I didn't know, all right, he's cutting because of this. I had no idea. And our offense is really complex. So I even when I thought I knew, I really didn't. But I just wanted to see, like, you know, why is Coach getting mad at him for taking that shot, or why is Rudy turning the ball over? Why is Joe turning the ball over? Why is Gordon taking this shot? How is he taking that shot? And I've been working with Johnny Bryant, who worked with Gordon, obviously. Those are the really stuff I was looking for, more so than kind of trying to figure out the offense and whatnot.
Summer League is not it's not an NBA game, but going to Summer League and you played well and you looked like you fit in physically with everybody there. Did that give you any kind of bounce? What did Summer League do for you, if anything?
I think Summer League was a lot slower than playing for Coach Pitino. Mm-hmm. So I think that made it a lot easier for me because, you know, practice we're going 5-on-5, full speed, 6-on-5. So to come from that and then 2 months later go to Summer League where the floor is spaced. I call Summer League, you know, it's a lot of college guys playing with NBA rules. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So not everyone knows like the tricks of the NBA, so you can get away with certain things in Summer League, like certain moves that now that I can't get away with because the guys know the tricks.
Bounce
pass
through the paint. So
exactly,
I see a lot of that in like Summer League.
Like there's so many plays and so many like crazy things that happen in Summer League, and I think the biggest thing was just that slowed down for me. You know, I'm always up and down fast, so just being able to see things and kind of understand where guys are going to be and getting the offense too, because like we ran a complex offense even in Summer League, and I think just being able to grasp that concept of moving the ball, sharing the ball and whatnot.
So you're in Utah and playing basketball, but you know, people that don't know you, baseball was actually your first love, right? That was,
yes, it was.
That was what Donovan Mitchell thought he was going to do with his life.
You know, growing up, that was it. You know, I played AU baseball and basketball, but you know, I had a few offers in college, or high school, excuse me, but it was early. Broke my wrist sophomore year. But, yeah, you know, I work out with the Mets pitching staff in the spring. You know, like Oliver Perez, Pedro Martinez.
Did you bat against Pedro?
No, I would stand in bullpen sessions and just stand there and kind of just watch the pitch go by. So when I got back to ninth grade, it was like, oh, this is easy.
Everything's easy compared to a Pedro curve.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that was pretty much, those are my spring. My spring break was in Port St. Lucie, Florida, and I thought that's where my career was going.
What do you think, and this is a crazy hypothetical, but given that you stood in and watched Pedro pitch, what would you imagine being tougher? Pedro in his prime facing a curveball, or you having to stare down Russell Westbrook coming at you full speed?
I'd say baseball is the hardest sport to play because it's all mental, you know, and especially for a pitcher. You give up 3 home runs in an inning, that could mess you up, not just for the season, but for a long time. And if you're in the wrong city, like I'm a Mets fan, so New York is really harsh. So I've seen, you know, like Oliver Perez, he was doing great, and then, you know, didn't really do too well towards the end. You know, you see a reliever like Aaron Heilman doing really well, and then in the playoffs he kind of choked up a little bit, and I haven't heard from him since. So, you know, that's really tough. You know, you look like LeBron, he kind of choked up in the finals, and now look at his career. You know, so I think baseball is a lot harder than I think any sport.
You mentioned the injury that you had as a sophomore, and that was a seminal moment in your life, right? I mean, that changed kind of the course of your athletic future.
That changed a lot. I think at that point, you know, I played high school basketball and baseball, and I tell the story where, you know, I averaged 25 points. You know, I was the typical jock, I guess you could say, in high school at that year. I felt like I was on top of the world, felt like I could do no wrong. And, you know, it just wasn't myself. You know, not saying I was a cocky, arrogant person, you know, still a good kid, but just wasn't myself all the way humble. And, you know, my mom told me, she said, you know, God's going to humble you if you don't continue to do things. You know, I would leave, like, I went to boarding school, so I would leave class or say I was sick and go take a nap and then just get ready for the game. You know, that's what I was doing. And I think the week after she told me that God's going to humble me, I broke my wrist. And at that point on, I realized that, you know, this could be taken away at any moment. And, you know, I think just continuing to play with that passion and aggression, like it can be taken away at any moment, has got me where I am today.
And did that focus you more on basketball after that injury?
I realized what I missed a lot more at that point, and I missed playing basketball. And Jaylen Brown's team smacked us by like 40, and he remembers that game, but I wasn't playing, you know. And I was just sitting there watching, and I realized I gained a passion for missing basketball as opposed to baseball a lot more.
Do you think you were a naturally better baseball player or basketball player?
I think I had all the tools to be a better baseball player. You know, I had the Mets help me out and whatnot, and I had the knowledge from such a young age, I think.
Because your father worked for the Mets.
Yeah, my father worked for me. Yeah, my dad worked for the Mets, and I think I had all the tools to help me get to become the best baseball player I could be, but, you know, basketball was kind of like my own thing, my own road. And to get where I am today, I think my high school coach, my AU coaches, and Coach P, because, you know, it was the harder road of the two, I guess you could say.
Did you enjoy one more than the other? Was one kind of?
I enjoy basketball a lot more now, just because, you know, I can control a lot more. You know, in baseball, you can be playing shortstop and not have any impact until the eighth inning. You know, so I think that's the biggest thing. You know, obviously, besides hitting and whatnot, but, you know, basketball, you can control a lot more. You know, there's certain things, certain aspects. If somebody's scoring a bunch of points, you can take it upon yourself to guard them and whatnot. So I think I definitely enjoy basketball a lot more.
You mentioned Coach Pitino a few times here. Mm-hmm. What's it been like to have to watch what he's gone through and what Louisville's gone through the last couple months?
It's been tough. It's been tough, man. You know, I saw him when we played the Heat down in Miami, and he's doing well, and hopefully he gets a coaching job. But it's been tough. You know, he was a guy that was instrumental in kind of changing my focus and my life, I guess you could say. But, you know, he's been so instrumental in a lot of guys' lives and a lot of guys' careers. And he's obviously a Hall of Famer coach, but to see all this happening, man, it's tough. And, you know, hopefully the school, and especially for my teammates, my former teammates from back at school, my friends, you know, more so than teammates, to see this happening to him is tough. And I've talked to him all the time, but, you know, they've pushed through and they've done a lot more than people thought, you know. And I think that's just been the biggest thing, just when adversity hits. Because, you know, my freshman year, we couldn't go to the tournament. So I know how some of the freshmen feel this year. But, you know, just being able to hang on and stay in there has been the biggest key. And I'm proud of all of them, and hoping that Coach P gets back on a job soon.
Do you have an opinion on – everybody seems to think they know what should be done with college basketball. Mm-hmm. How do you fix all the issues that it has? Because it seems like there's going to be more to come with this federal investigation. Yeah. If somebody asked you, how do you fix college basketball?
I think it's a tough question to ask, especially now, because one, we don't know everything right now. So I think, you know, it's easy to say we should just pay them. And that's my initial thought, you know, just pay them, because, you know, my banner was in the Yum Center, you know, like it was huge, you know, and it's in the front. And, you know, I didn't get paid for that. And then people say, oh, you get in your room and your books and your board covered and all that. But, you know, you try getting in at 3 o'clock in the morning from a game where the national media, like, I'll take a case in point, like, look at Grayson Allen. And some people say, oh, it can be regular students have it hard too. And I agree. But you look at Grayson Allen, you know, this kid, you know, despite what he did, the tripping, you know, he goes to every arena and he gets booed every night. Comes back, has to go to class, then has to hear himself talked about on SportsCenter. You know, the regular college student doesn't have to be talked about on SportsCenter. And then, God forbid, he goes out one night to a party and someone videotapes him just having fun, you know, or if the fight breaks out, Grayson Allen's in the building, you know. The regular person who was there in the fight, you know, doesn't get the national scrutiny. So I think that's the level that we have to show people, and I don't think not everybody who was making the decisions knows that level of scrutiny. And I respect Grayson Allen so much, because he's been, my 2 years of college, he's been through a hell of a lot, and he's still been doing well. But, you know, I think you get, if you look at it from that point of view, it changes your mindset of, man, these aren't just students. You know, these aren't just students of the game. This is, like, kids wear his jersey. Kids, like, look up to this guy, you know. So I think that's the approach, that if we look at it like that, then I think people will say, oh, maybe we should, you know, pay them in some way, or give them kind of some kind of a bonus or whatever.
Well, what do you think of the idea of, say, you, Donovan Mitchell's at Louisville second year, you want to go get a deal with Nike, you can go do that. Sort of the Olympic model, I guess.
Wow, I've never heard that one before.
It's kind of been floated. It's, you know, the Olympians that who aren't professionals, but if they want to have their own side deals, they can go and do it.
You're saying it might be in favor of that?
Yeah, is that something you think would work for college sports?
I say why not, but there's a lot of shadiness that can go on with that.
Just a little
bit. There's a lot, as we've seen so far, but, it's, like I said, it's tough, to be able to sit up here and say, yeah, that works, because at that point, if that's the case, you could talk to a kid since ninth grade and be mm-hmm. like, if you go to Duke, I'll sign you to a 3-year Nike deal. And that takes out
exactly.
the whole thing.
Changes
so
recruiting.
It changes
altogether.
Everything, So it changes, like, the top will stay at the top and the bottom will stay at the bottom, And you look at schools like who have talent, like even in March Madness, you look at schools like Loyola Chicago and Marshall and like, schools like that wouldn't have a chance if that was the case. And I don't mean any offense to that, but, if you say I'll pay you this money to go to Duke, I'm going to Duke in a heartbeat, especially coming out of high school, So I think that would be in tough.
There's no easy solution
no,
to any
not
of this.
Not at
whatsoever.
All.
By the way, did you call it the Yum Center in college?
KSC Yum Center, yes.
Did you call it that? Mm. There was no, short nickname
the
for
Yum
it?
And then the Baby Yum or Little Yum.
Okay.
That's the practice facility.
Did you like the name
Yum.
Of that? That's always one of the weird names.
It was
that
interesting.
That and the Smoothie King Center in New Orleans, so two of the.
Yeah, Smoothie King is a little interesting to me. But the Yum, everybody calls it there in the Yum in Louisville. So I think it's pretty normal when you say it, but I don't really like, I'll just say our arena if it's somebody from outside of Louisville. I'll just say like our home arena.
Let me finish with the team and the way you guys are playing right now. You go back about 2 months and you played Atlanta and you were 21-28 after a loss to Atlanta right then. And the season looked like, it looked like it was slipping out of control. Since then, you've lost, I think, just twice mm-hmm. since that game. The easy answer to the question of what changed was I think Rudy worked his way back into the mix mm-hmm. and got in shape. But is there more than that from that sort of late January point where you were struggling to where you are right now?
To be honest, I don't think there's any change. I think, obviously, the biggest change is Rudy coming back and changes a whole lot. But outside of that, offensively, we've been moving the ball the same. We're getting hitting shots now. Obviously, the trade deadline, we made a few moves. Jay's added a piece that, defensively that's unmatched right now. He's been doing a great job. And even offensively coming in, knocking down shots, cutting, he finds himself in this offense perfectly. And then obviously, like I said, Rudy, back there blocking shots, being able to post double-doubles like he has been, like he should get Defensive Player of the Year in my opinion. But, I think we've just been playing the same style of basketball. I think now all the stuff is starting to click. And we've had new guys on the team, myself, Ricky, Jonas, Jay, Thabo, and I think Royce. So you look at a guy like Royce, not really people know who he is and whatnot. He comes in and giving Harden problems, even though we lost, he's giving Harden problems. He's giving a bunch of guys fits. We won the Spurs game because he locked up two people at the end of the game, essentially. So, it's just little – everybody's finding their own role, and I think it's starting to show a lot more now, and I think we're all starting to click a lot better than we did at that time.
How much of – when Rudy's out, are you just a completely different team? Do you change the offense, the defense, everything? I mean, he's such a difference maker on both ends of the floor, mm-hmm. really.
I would say everything pretty much stays the same offensively, and for the most part defensively, I think the only difference is we don't – the guys drive a lot more, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it sounds simple, but – when you stand there and look at, like, Rudy, you're like, all right, I'll shoot a floater. The bigs will be like, all right, I'll shoot this floater or a jump shot from the free throw line. Like, we played Sacramento, and Willie Cauley-Stein shooting elbow jump shots, and Costa Cubas is shooting elbow jump shots, which is what we wanted. Mm-hmm. I think if Rudy's not there, obviously they're going to try and get to the rim and try and dunk. But I think just having him back just changes the opponent's vision of it as opposed to our mm-hmm. coverages and our schemes.
When you're at that number, that 21-28 kind of number against Atlanta at that point, what keeps you moving forward? You're in the Western Conference. It's a tough conference. It's going to take 43, mm-hmm. 45 wins to get into the playoffs. What keeps you guys kind of pushing forward in a situation like that?
For me personally, I didn't know at that point in Atlanta, what was that, January?
January 22nd or 23rd, something
point,
like that. Yeah.
I didn't know what to think. I was like, I didn't know whether we were a playoff team, whether we were going to go down, I had no idea, and I just looked to my teammates, and they all stuck with it. Like they knew. Like I think that's just the veteran leadership that we have on this team. Like they knew that this was going to click, and Coach has been adamant on that about it'll click eventually. It'll just keep going, and he's like he had this vision, like it was just going to happen. He just kept saying it'll keep falling into place, and and everything will go the way we want it to if we just keep buying in. And I think the biggest thing is we all bought in. We have nobody that was like, man, you know what? We're 21, 28. I'm like, screw this. Let's just get ready for next year. You know, I think that's the biggest thing. And me being a rookie, just being able to follow the guys ahead of me, like, after our December schedule, I was like, guys, like, is this going to be the whole
brutal schedule?
Is that going to be the whole season? And they were like, don't worry. Like, it's going to get better. You know, like, you know, that December schedule is like unheard of, you know? So, just listening to the older guys and following their lead has been the biggest thing for me.
Quinn comes from the college ranks as a coach, has that sort of teacher mentality, it seems to him. I think he's one of the better developmental guys in the NBA. What have your experiences been like working with him, and what have you learned from him over the last 4 or 5 months?
He's just like Coach Pitino, in my opinion. He's paid attention to every detail, every little thing, even in shoot around. You know, we're walking through a play. If you're standing in the wrong spot, like defensively guarding the action, like he will yell at you and let you know it. So you're always locked in, you're always ready, always focused. And I think that plays a lot into the developmental part, because if you're always focused, even when you're walking through something, it's habits, you know, he forms habits. So you know in the game, all right, I got to get there, I got to be able to do this. And that's the same with Coach P, you know. The only difference is we don't run on the treadmill in the NBA. So, like, if you're not in the same place, you don't go on the treadmill for 5 minutes. But it's the same thing. The same thing being precise and always being on time and being in the right spot, stretching the right way, true routines, and everything has to be the same.
So you had 5-minute treadmill runs in college? Is that?
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Sometimes more, depending on if we lost, if we won, if he was happy, if he was mad.
Doesn't seem like that was fun.
Nah. No. It was worth it, though, but it wasn't fun.
Rookie of the Year, does it matter to you?
No, not at all. Okay. I think where we're at now as a team is exactly what I wanted when we first got, when, like, summer league ended and, you know, we figured out the season. Like, one, we came in and we were like, look, we're not rebuilding. You know, we came with Dennis and everybody made the adjustments. You know, we're getting Ricky, getting Thabo, drafting myself, getting Royce, made all the proper adjustments to make a push. But we just didn't know, and no one knew how much of a push we would make. And I'm a team guy, so, you know, like, this award won't affect me in 9 years, if we're talking selfishly, for my career. Like, if I win Rookie of the Year and we win the finals, I'm not even going to think about the award. You know, I'm more excited about the finals. But, you know, if it happens, then I'll be blessed and I'm honored to have it. But, you know, we're fifth seed right now, and hopefully we get to the fourth seed, maybe even third seed. But continuing to surprise people has been the theme here, and I like doing that, so I'm cool with that.
One thing I would think that has to be kind of cool for you is, and something's been noticeable around the league, is that when you play against certain teams, a lot of the veteran guys come up to you after games and you know, talk to you and seem to show you a lot of respect in those moments. I mean, what's that been like for you?
I think the biggest thing that surprised, or two things that surprised me, you know, Westbrook, when he talked to me, because, you know, LeBron talks to people after games and whatnot, and he's my favorite player, LeBron, or was, I guess you should say, but
can't be anymore, yeah.
But, you know, when Westbrook came up and said something, was pretty big. You know, I knew Melo and PG from the summer, but when Westbrook came up to me and was just talking to me, I was like, man, like, you know, this is special. You know, this doesn't happen often, and I won't share his message, but it was just along the lines of, you know, just don't stop, you know, continue to grind and keep working. And, you know, and if I'm earning respect from the guys around the league, I would prefer that than, you know, the Rookie of the Year award. Like, if, like, Dame and I are close and he's saying I'm his pick, you know, that's cool. Like, I'll take that. You know, so if your colleagues are saying, like, you know, you're doing the thing, then I'd rather that than anything else.
And you played, that's right, you played in the super secret summer league there that nobody's allowed into, that everybody in the media wants a camera involved in. What are those as serious as
those
they sound?
Those are as advertised. Those are as that was my first, that was my, like, people ask me what was my welcome to the NBA moment. Those were my welcome. Like, watching, like, what I would do is I would get there probably, see, like, when you play pickup over the summer, and you have to know this about athletes, you say pickup is at 1. Pickup won't start till about 2. So I get there at 1, and I'll see Melo working out there for an hour waiting for everybody to get there. And I'll just sit there and watch, you know, just watch. And I'm just sitting there, like, mesmerized, like, man, like, this is my life. I go to the gym, I work out, I play against guys like Melo, and I leave. Like, that's it. And just watching it, watching what he ate, the treatments, the everything to the little detail. And, you know, he's not having his best season so far this year, but he's playing well. And to see all the work he's putting in is huge, you know. And I can only imagine when things were really clicking back when he was in New York. You know, I think like the repetitions and the reps and the focusing, like the steam room, the weight room, all those little things I've just watched, and I would get there an hour early just to watch and just to observe.
Is there something? I mean, it's tough to add onto your game during the season. There's so much going on, but mm-hmm. is there something that you've played against guys that you've said to yourself, "All right, in the off season, I'm gonna try to add
pull
that
up
to
jump
my
shot.
Pull up yeah. jump shot." Who does it well?
Westbrook does it really mm-hmm. well.
He worked hard on that. I remember Westbrook, talking to him in the past, spent a lot of summers just stopping on a dime and shooting that practice shot thousands.
Yeah, full speed, like mm-hmm. stopping. Like that stuff you can't do that during the season. Mm-hmm. Like that's full speed, like repetition after repetition. Him and Dame are the two that I watch probably the most. You know, Kemba as well. Mm-hmm. But those two. And Kemba with Dame is more so a pull-up jump shot. That's a three. You know, he likes to come off that screen and knock that three down. I think that's one thing I'm getting from him. Or I realize I'm going to be like, I have to work on this. But Westbrook's mid-range pull-up is big as well, because some bigs aren't as agile. So, they won't be as up higher up on the screens. So that mid-range is all open. And if you can hit that, like you look at DeMar DeRozan, he's mm-hmm. making a living off of that.
Lillard draws fouls off those high three-point screens as well as anybody in the league, because he pulls up quickly mm-hmm. and they're just all over him.
He's got me many times. And I think it also helps that he's a known all-star mm-hmm. and a great player. So hopefully I tell him all the time, I said, look, hopefully in like 4 years, that's not going to be a call anymore. Like, hopefully we'll see.
He heat checks too a lot from that, from the logo. Sometimes he just wants to see how far he can shoot it from.
Exactly.
It's interesting. Well, Donovan, congratulations, man, on all your success far this year. Best of luck the rest of the way. And thanks for joining me.
No problem. Thank you so much.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Caron Butler and Donovan Mitchell for joining the show. As always, you can download archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply. Available in app only.